So for time constraint reasons, we'll just skip Jairata Madhava for today. It's also a very auspicious day. It is the disappearance day of Srila Rupa Goswami, as well as Goridas Pandit. So there's two subjects we'll be covering, so we might move a little bit quickly through the verse as well. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Maram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayet. Dashta Praishu Badreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Yutama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtagi. Today, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 15, Text 34. Yayaharad Bhuvo Bharam. Tam tanum bijaha vajaha kantakam kantakeneva dvayam chapishtu samam. Please chant. Yaya, that by which Aharat took away Bhavaha of the world, Bharam, burden, Tam, that, Tanam, body, Vijaho, relinquished, Ajaha, the unborn, Kantakam, thorn, Kantakena, by the thorn, Eva, like that, Dvayam, both, Cha, also, Api, although, Ishituhu, controlling, Samam, equal. Translation: the supreme unborn, Lord Sri Krishna, caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their bodies, and thus he relieved the burden of the world. This action was like picking out a thorn with a thorn, though both are the same to the controller. Purport. Srila Vishvanath Chakravarti Thakur suggests that the rishis like Shonaka and others who were hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Sutta Goswami at Naimisharanya were not happy to hear about the Yadus dying in the madness of intoxication. To give them relief from this mental agony, Sutta Goswami assured them that the Lord caused the members of the Yadus dynasty to relinquish their bodies, by which they had to take away the burden of the world. The Lord and his eternal associates appeared on earth to help the administrative demigods in eradicating the burden of the world. He therefore called for some of the confidential demigods to appear in the Yadu family and serve him in his great mission. After the mission was fulfilled, the demigods, by the will of the Lord, relinquished their corporeal bodies by fighting amongst themselves in the madness of intoxication. The demigods are accustomed to drinking the soma rasa beverage, and therefore the drinking of wine and intoxication are not unknown to them. Sometimes they are put into trouble for indulging in intoxication. Once the son of Kuvera fell in the wrath of Narada for being intoxicated, but afterwards they regained their original forms by the grace of the Lord Sri Krishna. We shall find this story in the 10th canto. But the Supreme Lord, both the Asuras and the demigods, are equal. But the demigods are obedient to the Lord, whereas the Asuras are not. Therefore, the example of picking out a thorn by another thorn is quite befitting. One thorn, which causes pinpricks on the leg of the Lord, is certainly disturbing to the Lord, and the other thorn, which takes out the disturbing elements, certainly gives service to the Lord. So although every living being is a part and parcel of the Lord, still, one who is a pinprick to the Lord is called an Asura, and one who is a voluntary servitor of the Lord is called a Devata, or demigod. In the material world, the Devatas and Asuras are always contending, and the Devatas are always saved from the hands of the Asuras by the Lord. Both of them are under the control of the Lord. The world is full of two kinds of living beings, and the Lord's mission is always to protect the Devatas and destroy the Asuras whenever there is such a need in the world, and to do good to both of them. Om Jnana Timurim Dasya Jnana Shalakya Shashuram Nitham Jnana Tasmaya Shri Guru Vainaha Namo Vishnu Guraya Krishna Krishtaya Vitale Shnaka Bhakti Vinanta Swami Tumarane Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Vajayana Yuvasesha Shunyavadya Vasya Jaya Deshi Dhyana. So Krishna states very famously in Bhagavad Gita, Puritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chudushkritam dharma samstapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. And so we hear in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, this kind of the concluding segment of Krishna's earthly pastimes, more so from the perspective of the Pandavas. And so much of the Srimad Bhagavatam is really from the perspective of the devotees and the stories of devotees in relation to Krishna. And in the beginning of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, we see the end of the Mahabharata, so to say, and the transition into Maharaj Parikshit's life. And we see it from the perspective of the devotees, of Krishna's close devotees, the Pandavas, and the Yadus and their family members, and so forth. And this segment in particular, the last few chapters, is slowly these devotees, how they give up their body and attain Krishna. And so here in this section, in general, it's delineating Arjuna's grief. And you can tell from Arjuna's closeness to Krishna throughout the Mahabharata, throughout the beginning of the first canto, that Arjuna and Krishna had a very, very tight bond, a very tight friendship. And he was a very loyal servant as well. And so he's so grief-stricken throughout, and he's showing these genuine feelings of loss, very human emotions. But at the same time, he remembers Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita, which gives him great solace. And throughout every verse up to this point, Arjuna is describing certain events that happened, that this happened and this happened, and only because of my dependence on Krishna, am I able to succeed. Only because of my dependence on Krishna could I have won the battle. And only my dependence of Krishna could I have defeated Indra, and so on and so forth. So he recognizes in every facet of his life how Krishna's hand is the only reason it was a success. And Arjuna holds on to these experiences and instructions of the Lord very, very dearly. And this is what pacifies his mind. This is what gives him solace to the heart. And this is what frees him from material contamination. So he hears upon the story of how the Kauravas get madly drunk, they fight with each other, and that in itself has a whole backstory. And what this verse is saying is that this was all under the will of the Lord. So there was often criticism that how come the Yadus or the family of Krishna, they got madly drunk and they just fought like this. And it's saying the purport that the Goswamis had this this doubt. So Sutta Goswami was saying this as well in order to pacify that doubt and to clear up the waters a little bit. So the Yadus dying in such a manner, it wasn't uncommon actually to them, because I see it as well, and there is a habit of a demigod to drink soma ras and to become intoxicated in such a way. But a lot of the Yadu family was members, or there were certain demigods who came to assist the Lord. And a very important example, a very interesting example that I didn't quite catch at first, is the one of the thorn prick. So it's saying, in Krishna's eyes, both demons and demigods, there's not so much difference. Of course, he favors the demigods, he favors those with godly qualities. But for him, his duty is the same. So just as a thorn, if I were to walk through the temple gardens to pick a rose, and I step on a rose thorn, and it hurts very much. Or a splinter, for example, where it's so thin that you can't take it out with just your nails. We need another splinter, another needle to take it out. So the same object, the thorn, one causes pain, and the other one relieves pain. So in the same way, Srila Prabhupada's giving a delineation, or he's explaining the example that's given, that one thorn represents the demons, and that demons is that they cause burden to the world, they cause burden to Krishna's devotees, and Krishna's devotees, or in this case the demigods are like the same thorn who's to remove the thorn that's giving pain. But from Krishna's perspective, they're both the same. Part of Krishna's mission is to relieve this burden, and under the servitorship of the devatas, who took birth as the demigods. So for Krishna, there's no difference. Both thorns, devatas and asuras, are under the control of the Lord. But the devatas are always saved, and the asuras are always annihilated. And that is the Lord's mission, and that's what's best for both of them. And there's an interesting statement by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where he says, the devotee is somewhere in between Prahlad Maharaj and Hirani Kashipu. The devotee is somewhere in between the asuras and the devatas. And then we see in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's some godly qualities, and then there's some demonic qualities. And reading that, you might think, well, I got a little bit of both of these. I can understand of both of them. And the interesting thing is, those who are on the side of Prahlad Maharaj, and Prahlad Maharaj, then they get the darshan of Krishna. Those who are on the side of Hirani Kashyapu also get the darshan of Krishna. In that sense, Krishna is, it makes no difference to him. But his mission is to annihilate one and save the other. And that's what's best for both of them. So you can see this example in terms for us. You know, where do we lie? Which thorn are we? Are we the one causing pain? Are we pricking the Lord in the leg? Or are we the one causing good, taking out the pain, taking out the burden? So this chapter in general is very much, I think, important to understand how these great personalities left their body and what consciousness, because that time comes for all of us. And Bhagavatam reminds us again and again, death can come at any time, and death can come in so many different ways. We hear of many, many stories in that way. So this is just a reminder of how the devotees deal with such a thing. And that's the mentality of the devotee that Arjuna has had so far. They recognize every minute situation, every little thing, and related that to being solely because of Krishna's mercy, nothing out of our own independent endeavor. So I'll just keep it very short for the Bhagavatam session, since I also want to talk about Sri Rupa Goswami. Today is his disappearance day, and it's a very, very special day. It's a very important day for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, as Sri Rupa Goswami is considered the head of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. He is the personality who we take shelter of, whom we are followers of, whom we consider Rupanugas in his specific succession, followers of his teachings. And in preparing for this class, I was really trying to think, what do I even know about Rupa Goswami? And I just hear, yes, very important. He's the most important. I know Goswami, the head of the Goswamis, this, that. But personally, what is my relationship with him? What do I understand about him? And so I thought to myself, okay, yes, Rupa Goswami, he's Rupa Manjari, he's Nitya Siddha. he knew the Maharishi Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I came up with so many answers, but then I realized each answer was just on a theoretical platform. And each answer was just thinking of Rupa Goswami, of a historical figure, actually, and not so much my Acharya. We sometimes hear the term my Srila Prabhupada. There's a personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada as our founder Acharya, as our Siksha Guru. But Guru also means disciplic succession. Guru means more than just our living Diksha Guru or first Acharya in the line of Acharyas. It means the whole succession, especially the six Goswamis, who are direct followers of, and especially Rupa Goswami. So thinking about this, I really wanted to touch today about how do we make Sri Rupa Goswami become real for us? How do we understand Sri Rupa Goswami as not just a historical figure? Of course, it's important to place him on a high pedestal. That's where he belongs. He's a very, very important figure. And he's very much favored by the Lord, and he's very much the person we have to go to the beck for mercy. But if we only keep him on a high pedestal and don't develop any relationship about him, we don't get to know him better, then how can we pray to him? How can we beg for his mercy if there's no personal relationship developed? So, taking the mercy, taking the empowerment of the Acharyas is something very much that's part of our Vaishnava culture and part of what we do in order to progress. Jyotarsan Das Thakur, even though he missed the association of Rupa and Sanatha, he missed the association of many of Mahaprabhu's associates. Through Srila Jiva Goswami, he heard about them, he learned about them. In his later years, he sings in his Jnanila prayers. And you can tell how much emotion he has, how much he wants to meet these personalities, how much he has a relationship with them, even though he did not meet them. But through hearing about them, through his disciplic succession, through Jiva Goswami, he developed so much affection to Rupa and Sanatha, he became such a steady follower. First, when you understand who the personality is, then really you get a grasp for I want to follow them. And that you see that so much with Srila Prabhupada's disciples. They fall in love with Srila Prabhupada first, and then everything he says makes so much sense. It's so easy to grasp. So, as well as that, it's also important to understand Rupa Goswami in a human way. Not just he is an associate of Mahaprabhu who we can't relate with because of his high status and high platform, but actually he has struggles as well. He has lessons that can teach us that we can learn directly from. So I want to start with understanding Srila Rupa Goswami through the experiences and the life of Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada had a very unique relationship with Rupa Goswami, and there's many gems and stories of his encounters with Rupa Goswami throughout the years leading up to him coming to the West. And a lot of these were only known after Srila Prabhupada passed away, because during this time he was very, very, keep this very personal. He wouldn't very rarely share some of the more mystical aspects of his life. But we start in 1955. You see, it's a very significant year in Srila Prabhupada's life. He took vannaprasth. He renounced family life at this point. And even though there's a lot of criticism in order to do so, he knew what the greater mission was. He understood for years that his spiritual master gave him instruction, and this is the time to start following it. To start taking it on to the next level. So he saw the bigger need and the higher need to fulfill. He gave, leaving family life, gave him freedom to preach, again, freedom to travel, but he struggled very much. It was every week a different place. You know, 1 week trying to go to a mud temple, 1 week trying to establish somewhere else, staying in a friend's house, trying to do a program here, a program there, printing back to Godheads all by himself. And so for the first time he was alone with no fixed abode. It said that he was in Delhi in the scorching summer heat, going to the printing press, and he wouldn't even have any breakfast. And when the shop owner asked Abhaya, have you had any breakfast, anything to eat? He said, no, I'm saving a few pesos, I can print a few more copies of the magazine. So he struggled so much in this way. He would write letters to his contemporaries and godfathers stating, I'm crying alone in the wilderness. Crying alone in the wilderness. And that was his struggle. And he continued in that way. But something very, very fascinating happened in 1956. And at the age of 60, Srila Prabhupada, when you would think that the clock's ticking, he's almost 60 years of age. In America, that's closing in on retirement life. That's when we start winding down. But he has this mission to go to the West and preach. But what does he do instead of going to the West at that point? He goes to Vrindavan Dham, and he does what all the great acharyas did before, continuing on their mission. They situated themselves in Vrindavan Dham, they beg for the mercy of the Goswamis, for the acharyas before them, and they perform various good bhajan. So, he first took residence in Bhaktigopal Temple, and in 1958 he started giving dreams, and these were reoccurring dreams of the spiritual master, where he would say, please, take sannyas, now is the time, take sannyas. And the dreams came repeatedly, and repeatedly. And he couldn't ignore them. So he went to his to Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj and mentioned about his dreams, what do I do? And Maharaj said, yes, this is a fact, you must take sannyas. And the traveling preacher, this is necessary, and this will help you. And so he did, in 1959. And around the same time, with a similar, it was a very important encounter, very important dream as well, and like, to my knowledge, this is the first sort of encounter with Rupa Goswami that we know of. He had a dream, and in his dream, he was still situated at Bhaktigopal Temple. He saw many Vaishnavas, and all the Vaishnavas were in the courtyard of Radhadavanar Temple, and they were chanting around Rupa Goswami Samadhi. And they were chanting around Rupa Goswami himself, who was sitting in the courtyard, and there were many devotees chanting around him. And Rupa Goswami was sitting there, and he was looking at Srila Prabhupada very affectionately. And this is the dream. So Prabhupada said that he accepted this dream as a call from Rupa Goswami, and he took it as a sign to move to Radhadavanar Temple. And so in 1959 to 1965, he spent 6 years at Radhadavanar Temple. And there's a few things significant with Radhadavanar Temple. Srila Prabhupada would call it the hub of the wheel of the center of the spiritual world. And it's a really quite a statement to say, a hub of the wheel of the center of the spiritual world. And one primary point that's delineated about this is because Radhadavanar Temple is located in Sevakunj. And Sevakunj is the place where the divine couple have their most exalted pastimes. It's the epitome of all ras, and it's the intimate and the most profound pastimes occur in that location, out of anywhere in the spiritual world, and that's the place of the rasa dance. But another reason is that was the bhajan place and the samadhi mandir of Srila Rupa Goswami. And for this reason, understanding from the dream, understanding from further encounters, this was one main reason of Srila Prabhupada went there, was to seek the mercy and blessings of Rupa Goswami. And knowing that he wants to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, and knowing how all the great Goswamis came to Vrindavan to seek blessings in order to fulfill their mission, Prabhupada knew just the exact spot was in Radhadavanar, just the exact spot was by the feet of Srila Rupa Goswami. Because only through him could he get the mercy to fulfill what we're all in today. And it was very, very significant that this preparation before fulfilling an order to spiritual master is not to be taken lightly. When something very great is given to us by someone very great, we may not be qualified to do so immediately, or we may think we're qualified, but really we require very much external strength, extra strength. By our own willpower, we can do very, very little. But with the mercy and blessings of the Vaishnavas, very much can be done. So that's really the theme throughout what we see. This full surrender to acharyas in order to seek blessings, in order to continue to do what the mission is. And so Prabhupada had a very strict and wonderful schedule, really, but it was very regimented in Radhadavadar. He would write, chant, take darshan of Radhadavadar. He would see all the Goswami's temples in the area in the morning for darshan. Then he would come back, and if you've been, there's two rooms. There's his residence room, and then there's his kitchen. There's photos of him cooking in a famous three-tiered cooker. So he would cook, he would offer it, and he would sit in the kitchen, another beautiful photo. We're sitting with one leg up, and he's looking out the window. And if you look outside that window, the thing you see is the Samadhi Mandir Srila Rupa Goswami. And that was his meditation, always. Srila Prabhupada once said that he would often sit in front of Rupa Goswami Samadhi and pray the following. Oh Rupa Goswami, please show yourself to me and give me guidance and strength to realize my mission. So this is his meditation, and you can tell that how he would sit in front of that same spot and pray to Rupa Goswami, that this was constantly in his mind. But at the same time, many people didn't know of Srila Prabhupada's mission in Vrindavan. Many knew of him, but they didn't exactly know what his further plans were. And this was understood when the devotees went back to his contemporaries after Prabhupada left this world, or even during Prabhupada's first visit back to Vrindavan. He kept it very private. And that's another very important point, that in his humility to keep his bhakti private, to keep his intentions very private, that also sought the mercy of the Vaishnavas, because if he were to make it a very public thing, it would become about himself. And that way, it's no longer his mission. It's no longer him fulfilling his mission as a spiritual master in order to do something, but it draws self-attention. So this social development showed that in keeping certain things private between him and the acharyas, between him and Krishna, then mercy flowed. And while at Radharama or Temple, there's a few other encounters that I think really help us understand that when we take shelter of Srila Rupa Goswami, it is very much possible to develop a relationship with him. If we can very much so strive to follow his instructions, then we can even associate with Rupa Goswami in this lifetime. So there was a rumor in Srila Prabhupada's time that he had darshan of Rupa Goswami. And this was going around, so Harisarika, who was his servant at the time, decided to ask Srila Prabhupada in the evening to do his massage. Prabhupada's massage time was very more open to conversation about his life. He would often remember his childhood, and a lot of the childhood details and stories we have today are from those times. So he took advantage. To Srila Prabhupada, the stories that he had darshan of Rupa Goswami, is that true? And Srila Prabhupada kind of nonchalantly, yes, that's common knowledge. And he kind of blown it off, he didn't say anything more. So years later, after Srila Prabhupada's departure, I thought there was only one encounter, or one story of this, but I found three different stories. So, probably the most famous is published in Mohit Kripa's book. I think it's called Wherever Love Was Here, if I'm not mistaken. It's a compilation of Srila Prabhupada's contemporaries and godbrothers and their remembrances of him as, you know, a devotee living in Vrindavan, before he was even Srila Prabhupada or Bhaktivinoda Swami. And so there is one such devotee, his name is Hridayananda Babaji Maharaj in Vrindavan. And so the devotees asked him about his memories. And when he heard Srila Prabhupada's name, he became very emotional. He began to cry. And the first thing he said, and it really revealed a lot, and he said, "Swami Maharaj, I have never seen anyone in my life do such intense sadhana like he did." And the devotees explained that Srila Prabhupada's accomplished his work. After Vrindavan, he went to the west, he started with nothing, he opened it. Started ISKCON, started all these temples, thousands of devotees joined. And Babaji Maharaj said, "I'm not surprised." Why am I not surprised? Because I witnessed him in this temple, and he got the mercy of Rupa Goswami. And the story is as follows from the book. Prabhupada spread this Krishna consciousness by the mercy of Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada used to pray to Rupa Goswami, "You please give me your mercy." And then he got that mercy. I know this because I saw things he did at the Radharama temple. My room is still located in the same place as it was then, in 1964-65. Many times in the middle of the night, at midnight, or 1 or 2 in the morning, I would hear a voice crying from inside the courtyard by Rupa Goswami Samadhi Mandir. That voice was calling out and crying, but I did not know what it was because I was trying to take rest. But one night, on the full moon, I heard that voice again, so I climbed up to the roof of our house and looked down into the Radhavadar courtyard. I saw something very amazing. Srila Prabhupada was sweeping the courtyard of Rupa Goswami Samadhi. He was bending down with a small broom, and he swept the ground by the Samadhi. He was crying out, "Hey Rupa, hey Sanatan, hey Gurudev, please give me your mercy. Without your mercy, I cannot do anything. Give me the mercy, give me the strength that I may fulfill your orders." Then I realized that it was he who almost every night was calling out as he was sweeping like this. It's so amazing. It's just so intimate and private, and there's such a wonderful relationship there with Srila Rupa Goswami. And as I looked into it a little bit more, there's a few more stories. So actually, Harisarika Prabhu, in went back to Radha Govinda temple also after Gopal's departure, and he asked another Goswami living there named Gopal Chand Maharaj, and he asked him about this Srila Prabhupada having any encounters with the Goswami. And as a young boy, he was there, and there's this small story. And in the story, Prabhupada tells him as a young boy, Rupa Goswami said to me, and it says as follows, Rupa Goswami said to me, you write these books, you go to the West, and we will take care of the rest. You write these books, you go to the West, and we, meaning the six Goswamis, will take care of the rest. And that's really like the crux, the epitome of begging for mercy, is that when you receive the blessings of Vaishnavas, fully you're under their shelter. Fully nothing can go wrong. Because as it says, Rupa Goswami told specifically to Srila Prabhupada, we will take care of the rest. You just follow your duty because you have surrendered. Because you're fully surrendered unto us. And only through us, you get the mercy of Lord Nityananda and Krishna. And a third story that I found last night was as well that this was from Srila Prabhupada to Gurudas directly. And Indra Maharaj talked about it in his recent lecture on Rupa Goswami. And Gurudas narrates the story. And Prabhupada personally told him he was in Radha Damodar temple. And he would always meditate about Rupa Goswami while taking his meals, as we were discussing earlier. And he went on to say that Rupa Goswami once appeared to him and told him that he was taking his meal. Now you have written some books, take them to the Western countries and preach. Do not hesitate any longer. So you see many beautiful themes here. You know, one is the preparation phase. And in our lives, there's always a tendency for passion, for Raja Gans to want to do something immediately. You know, I have an idea, I have a thought, even a Krishna conscious thought, and I want to do it now, and I want to get everything done now, and I want the recognition, and there's so much passion behind that. But we see from Srila Prabhupada's life that more important than just getting things done is that is to develop pure desire to fulfill an order. To develop pure desire and to develop pure, to develop a relationship with our acharyas so we can receive mercy. So really, in the end, by the time we're ready to perform a task for Krishna, is not due to our own will, it's not due to our own prowess, it's not due to anything that we can do ourselves. It's fully because of the acharyas. So Srila Prabhupada would think in humility, he would say, it's only by the mercy of my spiritual master, it's only by the mercy of Rupa Goswami. Of course that's coming from humility, and of course he was empowered, and we can also be empowered. But the truth is, it was fully coming from the acharyas, it was fully coming from Rupa Goswami, from Bhagavad Gita. This is in actuality, not just out of humility. So we can understand the same thing. To follow the orders of Srila Prabhupada for this mission, we can do so the same way he did so. It's no secret. It's not just because Srila Prabhupada was so elevated that we put him on a high pedestal and think, we can't do what he did. We can't attempt it. He's too advanced. He put the work in. He begged very much for the mercy. And so Prabhupada understood that his real desire, his desire of a spiritual master, would be fulfilled if he gets Rupa Goswami's mercy. And this is also confirmed in a verse that Krishna has from Rupa Goswami. Where he says, Sri Rupa Sanatha Bhakta Raghunath, Sri Jiva Gopala Bhakta Dasa Raghunath, Echaya Guruda Param Charana Valam, Yahaite Vikshanash Abhishta Puran. I pray to the lotus feet of the six Goswamis, Sri Rupa Sanatha Bhakta Raghunath, Sri Jiva Gopala Bhakta and Dasa Raghunath. So that all impediments to my writing of this literature will be annihilated, and that my real desire will be fulfilled. So Prabhupada knew his real desire. He knew the words of Krishna's congressional song. He understood very much what the method was to seek that mercy. That's so much more. We'll never stick to it. But I think, at least just pausing and thinking about this, is that if we look at our own lives and our relationship with acharyas, if we look around the room, we can see different photos of different personalities. And we can think that to develop real advancement in Krishna consciousness, it's going to take more than just where we're at right now. And it's going to take a lot more than just our endeavors. And if you really wanted to follow in the footsteps of what our acharyas have done, and we hear words like beg for mercy, pray for mercy, seek for blessing, it can seem very much over the top of our head. It can seem very much that this is something that sits very much in the Krishna consciousness movement. This is what we say as devotees. Beg for mercy, you know, we touch each other's feet, and we do certain things that means we get mercy. But it's more than something external, it's more than something we state. Seeking mercy from Acharya really means, well, one of these persistence and desire. This is Srila Prabhupada, it means we don't give up, even if we may not know who Guru Goswami is, we may not know who our Acharyas are, we may not have met Srila Prabhupada, we read his books, we hear about him, we hear his glories, we get to understand him, and that way we develop attachment to him. And we do so through a lineage, you know, as someone who's never met Srila Prabhupada, the second generation devotee. I learn about him through my elders, through my parents, through my guru, through my community, through my devotees, through his books, through books about him, and I get to know him. And you can see children, they love Srila Prabhupada so much, they have a relationship since birth, they've been hearing about him, they've been learning about him. And then you see the kind of devotional potency children have, and their prayers can be very strong and very powerful, because they have a relationship with the Acharya already, and through that relationship they can very easily connect. And when they can very easily connect with the Acharyas, that link is unbreakable. You know, there's just one chain link by yourself, you can get lost here and anywhere. And so keep connecting, and that chain is just, you can't break it apart. And that's really, for me, how I feel I can understand the Buddha song a little bit better. And maybe just by hearing glorification in pastimes might go over my head, but if I start here, if I start worded, you know, with my Srila Prabhupada and understand how this Srila Prabhupada understand his acharyas, and through him maybe that way I can receive some mercy, maybe that way I'll be qualified enough, I'll be genuine enough, that my prayers to the acharyas will also be heard, and there will be a connection there. I just want to say a few things about Srila Prabhupada himself, since it is disappearance day, and just a few small stories or anecdotes and qualities that he has just to glorify him. And he was completely empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, fully. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he fulfilled his mission in a unique way, is that he empowered different devotees for different tasks. So for example, for Haridas Thakur, he empowered him in the chanting of the holy name, and thus he was known as Mahacharya. Jivu Swami, he was empowered in tattva, in philosophy, in debate, that he was considered the top scholar in Gaudiya Vaishnava lineage. And so he was known as tattva acharya. And Rupa Goswami was instructed very famously for 10 days on the banks of Prayag in transcendental relationships in rasa, and thus was known as rasa acharya. He could grasp and communicate to others' understandings of transcendental relationships very, very well. And we see that what he learned, he put into what's known as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or what we have today as Nectar of Devotion. And that's really our guidebook for understanding rasa, for understanding the science of Krishna consciousness. And I was hearing in one statement, in one lecture, that he had such an ability, a poetic ability. Not only did he write what's considered the most predominant Gaudiya Vaishnava playwrights that we know as Lalita Madhava and Vidagdha Madhava, but he had so much wonderful poetry, such as Padyavali. In one statement, in one verse, he says this: "If I have a choice between union with Krishna and separation, I will choose separation, because in union I only see one Krishna. But in separation, I see Krishna in every corner of the universe." So beautifully, I can explain what Viparamba Bhava is in just one poetic sentence. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami at separate times his instructions to establish, based on Vedic scriptures, the worship of Krishna, to systemize a way of worshipping Krishna. So deity worship was often spoken a lot and performed very much by both Sanatana and Rupa. To discover places Krishna appeared in the past, so the holy teachings of the Dham. So first to Sri Vrindavan Dham. And it's also said that Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami would go to Mathura and find books on archaeology.
so they can excavate places. And as well, he was instructed to build temples. There's also the one thing very intriguing about Rupa Goswami is his personal bhajan. Rupa Goswami was extremely deep devoted, of course, but he had bhajan kutirs in many different places in Braj, and he would spend one night under a different tree. And the reason being so is each night under a different tree wasn't just because he was a vairagi, and that was his intention, just to be a renunciate, but rather under each tree, he would have a different pastime of Krishna revealed to him, and a different lila would be there. And in this way, he would take note of it, he would write it down, and he would chant in many different places around Braj. There is a very famous verse, and the verse is, he states about chanting the holy name. This was his case. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance within the mouth. We then desire many, many mouths. When that name enters the holes of the ears, we desire many millions of ears. And when the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and therefore all the senses become aware. I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. And this is his real case of chanting. And actually, when this was when Lord Chaitanya visited Rupa Goswami on the tour, he saw this particular verse written. And just by seeing his handwriting, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became intoxicated. And he said, "Your handwriting is as beautiful as a row of pearls." And then by hearing this verse, Haridas Thakur went into ecstasy. And he said he had never heard anything so beautiful and comprehensive in the glorification of the holy name. So he had such talent, such quality, along with such taste. And it's something really incredible about him. And later, Jiva Goswami came to Vrindavan. Together, they resided in Sevapinch, and that became Radha-Gandhar temple. And actually, there's a book called Sanamadipika, which is written by one of the Goswamis of the Radha-Gandhar temple, who was the deity of Rupa Goswami. And it states many details about Rupa Goswami, very, very specific details. But I had no idea. He was fluent in Bengali, in Sanskrit, other languages such as Persian. He was an expert mathematician. There's a story about this in his earlier days when he was a minister. He was a renowned scholar. He was known to many sampradayas. He was also an expert artist and sculptor. And in fact, it was him that he understood Jiva Goswami's desire to worship the deity. And so in doing so, he carved the deity himself. And that beautiful eight-inch deity became Damodar. And that's the deity that's in the Damodar temple. And years later, that temple was built up. So this is just a little touch of the nectar of Rupa Goswami and of his glories, that they're really endless, and there's so much out there. I just like preparing for this class, I just wanted to listen to 30 lectures and get it all in, but there's not enough time. And this ends with a very famous verse that we all know that fully encompasses Rupa Goswami fully. Shri Chaitanya Manodishtam Stapitanya Rupalakam Svayam Rupa Kramayam Vidati Svapakantikam. Now, Shri Chaitanya Manodishtam, the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Rupa Goswami understood the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Rupa Goswami understood the mission, the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the very innermost desire. And so the verse is, when will Shri Rupa Goswami, who has established within this material world the mission to fulfill the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, understand the desire of Mahaprabhu, when will he give me shelter under his lotus feet? And when this verse is stated, and it's referring to a very specific pastime, where Rupa Goswami heard Chaitanya Mahaprabhu singing a verse that appeared just like a conversation between a young boy and a young girl. And this was during Rathyatra. And Rupa Goswami, hearing this verse, he wrote a commentary right there on the spot. And he kept that commentary on the roof of Haridas Thakur's hut. And then he went to his bath. And meanwhile, Lord Chaitanya came to the hut of Haridas Thakur and he found that verse. And he was struck with wonder. So he asked Rupa Damodar Goswami, "How could Rupa Goswami, how could he understand the confidential feelings in my heart? I didn't say it. I didn't say anything. How can you understand this? It's written right here in this verse. And Sri Dhammadhara Goswami replied, he said, it's because you have showered your mercy upon him. And Lord Chaitanya confirmed this. He said, while I was in Prayag, seeing the genuine humility of Rupa Goswami is another very important aspect of his nature. He's extremely, extremely humble. Seeing the genuine humility of Rupa Goswami, I empowered him completely to understand my heart. When Rupa Goswami came back to the hut, he bowed down to Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya asked him, how do you know my mind? And Rupa Goswami, of course, out of humility, didn't say anything. And out of love, Mahaprabhu gave him a little love tap. And this is just the lineage, and it's also confirmed by Narottam Thakur in a verse where he says, Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoi Deya Kuti Kabe Hama Bhujabo She Juvara Kuti. When shall I become very much eager to study the books left by the six Goswamis? And specifically in this verse referring to Rupa and Raghunatha. One has to learn the conjugal loving affairs of Radha and Krishna through the teachings of the six Goswamis. So, we learn about Radha and Krishna through the six Goswamis, and through their mercy, we get the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Chaitanya. Through their mercy, we get the mercy of Radha and Krishna. And in such a way, if we find ourselves in a way, in a place like I am, currently still am, where Rupa Goswami is just a historical figure, but we're trying to make a personal connection with him, we have to look no further than go through our acharyas, go through Srila Prabhupada, understand what was his relationship, how did he understand Rupa Goswami, how did they have a connection, and how can I have that same connection as well. Now this close with this last quote. Srila Prabhupada said this in a lecture. Srila Prabhupada would say, my policy is following the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. He says, just somehow or other, let them first of all become attached and attracted to Krishna. That is my policy. Jai Rupa Goswami, Ki Jai. And before I ask any questions, I just want to give thanks to all the devotees who I stole from their classes in order to prepare today. This is very much just me picking and choosing nectar from the devotees, such as His Holiness Nidhana Maharaj, His Holiness Sachinanda Swami, Sukhita Prabhu, Satyaraj Prabhu in his book, and so on and so forth. So, thank you. Yes?
Can you verify this? Did Prabhupada say that Rupa Goswami told him, you go to the west and preach and I'll be behind you? Is that what I'm reading?
Not directly,
but I remember that.
I can't remember that one, but the reference is the three stories I mentioned of there being encounters with Rupa Goswami. One was mentioned in the book that came from one of his contemporaries. One that came directly from Guru Das, who heard it from Prabhupada, and the other came from Hari Sarasvati, who heard from one Goswami. So I think the only one which, I don't know if we have any recordings of Prabhupada talking about his experiences with Rupa Goswami, but they're all kind of secondhand. They were disciple to someone else. But of that particular one, I can't say for certain.
Yeah, Hare Prabhu. Do you or anyone else know who wrote Krishna Lilamrita? Krishna Lilamrita.
Lilamrita or Karnamrita?
I think it's Lilamrita.
Ishvar Puri. Krishna Prabhu is Ishvar Puri.
Ishvar Puri, yes.
Yeah.
Because Rupa Goswami name is mentioned there constantly, you know. In praise of Rupa Goswami. So,
that was a really inspiring class for him. Thank you so much. I really appreciated the whole idea of how so many times we want to do something and we're in the Raja mode, you know, the mode of passion, and the importance of just really depending on the acharyas and Prabhupada and Krishna to how preparing is such a big part of it. That is like really so very helpful. You know, just a practical and practical way.
Yeah.
Also, I was going to ask you that when Rupa Goswami, like, how they would go to each tree and he would write down the pastime, is that something that was revealed or is that something he found written down, do you know?
Well, that particular point?
Yeah.
That was something I had heard actually a lot. I'm not staying at the manor, maybe it was around also Rupa Goswami's appearance day, his appearance day. But I remember our Bhakti Shastri teacher mentioned that in the class, and the other teacher mentioned it. It seemed to be like a hot topic. Everyone was talking about it. And everybody mentioned the Goswamis, whatever we had a class about the Goswamis. But the particular reference to that, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Sorry.
Very nice. And then also the point of how Radhadamodar Temple is the center of the universe, right? Is that I remember when I visited one time, went into the temple, and that it was open to that. Maybe it always is open to that part of the book, but it's just incredible to think of.
Mm-hmm.
Because who knows that except for a very privileged few. So you certainly gave out drops of nectar, and I just really appreciate that.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask you, and this is a good comment that I couldn't agree more.
Three-tiered cooker that Srila Prabhupada would cook on is just down the road here in Alachya with Lord Sri Tirupa, and it's quite safe with her.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm out and about and I realize that I don't have one of Srila Prabhupada's literatures with me, and I lament, you know. So then I was thinking, wow, what a nice example. Srila Prabhupada, how he prepared to come to the West, is he brought these books. And so, you know, like we can also follow in his example whenever we're out and about, you know, going to the grocery store or whatever, just have at least one book or something in your pocket, and then we're following Srila Prabhupada's footsteps.
That's true. And to add to that, we hear statements such as Srila Prabhupada's books contain all the information that we need. We can also understand that his books have been backed by Goswamis, who have been backed by Rupa Goswami, who is this. He gave the instruction, you complete writing your books, we'll take care of the rest. You write your books, now is the time, go to the rest. So his books as well are appreciated not just by us here, but they're appreciated by our charities.
And I'm putting the word as one online question from Stephen Iwani. Do you recall the source for Rupa Goswami being referred to as an excellent mathematician?
Sarvajitika. This is a book that is written by one of the Goswamis of Gopinduji Mandir and Vrindavan. And so it's a book that I believe describes in this book there's many different descriptions of Rupa Goswami's talents, life, and so on. Okay, I think that's good. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada, 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 Srila Prabhupada,